Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Mark Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Although these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can disclose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you so very, very much for that introduction and disclaimer. We appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to start off by saying and reminding everyone from the call that we had last week and, of course, last night with GW is that we're changing the format a bit about. PJ is going to be repositioned working with John, which is his mentor, and they work together, and making his time more available to actually do work that's been pressing. And I'm going to be taking over the calls on Tuesday night, sharing information, et cetera. I want to remind you that the primary purpose of these calls that we do, as informative as they are, is to, from a sales perspective, if you would, is chumming the waters so that you know and understand that there is a team in place able to execute professional teaching material, both verbal in private conference calls as well as in written form, providing you written teaching syllabus in the form of pleadings and filings that they might file where they're similarly situated, and using that as a teaching tool to add to your issues. If you have, if your issue is involving property, then by placing the property into a trust, the idea behind it is that actually one of the members of the team can step in as a trustee. At best, at worst, have been given just limited power of attorney. But it's always best for them to be the trustee so they can literally walk into court and operate in a pro per capacity and defend and do what needs to be done. But if they're not able to do that because you're the defendant and there's no property involved, then it's an effort to teach and instruct and to walk you through it. Now, this has been the process for nearly 30 years. And whether you are a rocket scientist, a homemaker, an over-the-road truck driver, we've had every possible student that has stepped forward. And we've always made it and managed it to where it works out for everyone to accomplish the goals that they want to do. The great thing about this is that you're not dealing with an attorney who is a member of the bar, who is an officer of the court, and has their own business that they live or die on, whether it's successful or not, or whether they are able to put food on their table and keep the roof over their head. as an officer of the court, their first duty is to the court, not you. As a member of the state bar, if they don't adhere to the public policies of the State Bar Association, then they will lose confidence and membership status, which they can't afford to do. And if they don't take care of the first two items that I just mentioned, then the third place, being their own business, is going to suffer greatly, and, of course, they're not going to let that happen for any reason. You, when you hire an attorney, are always fourth on the list of priorities, and that doesn't matter who the attorney is. It could be your brother or sister. Doesn't matter. When a proper and effective defense is put in place, when good behavior bad behavior on the part of opposing counsel or the judge is not dealt with in a lawful manner, which an attorney would never deal with that issue, then you in deference with a information provider that's available to you, like PJ John and Bernie and Chris Ann, and there's several others, they are there. Their object is to win. Their object is to utilize any tools necessary, needful, to bring about a resolution to your issues that is proper and honest and fair and right. And that's something that most attorneys are woe to ever even entertain, never mind accomplish. So with that in mind, I want you to understand that everything that we're teaching today or talking about tonight is in preparation for you to come to the conclusion that whatever the issue is that you're dealing with, that these are the people that have the solutions for you to explore at minimum and engage at best. So with that having been said, let me start off with, we're actually starting a new cycle right now of the teaching that we started with W's class and with PJ's class a number of months ago. So we've completed it last week, and now we're going to restart it again. It begins, I was born a first-class citizen. I entered into contracts that, without my knowledge, made me a second-class citizen. I was surprised to find that the United States government recognizes two distinct classes of citizens, let alone that my citizenship status has changed. At first, I didn't believe it when I heard it. It was not until I learned how to use the law library in the county courthouse that I was able to confirm my status. Now, I'm not an attorney, so this conversation that we're having right now should not be considered as legal advice. And it may be used as the basis of your own research. This conversation tonight does not have a copyright, so you're free to engage and share this with as many people as you like. There are many research articles and papers that have been used to bring all this together so that you have the understanding that I will be imparting to you. You may find that the ideas presented tonight conflict with the model of government that you've been taught. You may also find these ideas impossible to believe, and this is understandable. The further that we go through this material, the more you'll change the way you filter information about what the government is actually doing. And if you cannot believe any of this, then, well, you just should just ask some questions until you do and do your own research. Sometime in the future, you may come back and when it makes more sense to you, and I believe that the concepts described that I'm about to share with you are absolutely true. But you should not accept it just because I said so. You should do your own confirming and validation. So with that having been said, let me start the first class. Let's go and do the 40,000-foot view, the big picture. The United States of America is a unique nation. It was the first, and of course it still is the only, constitutional republic in the world. before the American Revolution, the King of England owned all the land in his colonies. The inhabitants of the colonies he also owned and were known as his subjects. When the Revolution War was over, the king signed the Treaty of Peace. In that treaty, he said that all the land in the former colonies was owned now by the people, and that all of his sovereign powers that he held in the colonies were now transferred, not to the government, but to the colonies, but to the people of the colonies. And this made all the citizens of the colonies sovereigns, or co-sovereigns with one another. And this has never happened before or since in any country throughout the world in the history of the world. In other countries, the government is sovereign. It makes laws for its subject citizens, and it gives them their privileges that they call rights. In the United States, the people are the sovereign. The people are endowed by its creator, their creator, whom most people call God. His name actually is Yahuwah when you go into the Hebrew. And these rights are from the creator of the universe. And the government was instituted for the sole purpose to secure these rights. We the people gave a portion of our sovereignty. We delegated a portion of our sovereignty to the state government. And then the states delegated a small portion of that sovereignty to the federal government, so that it would be strong enough to defend the people. The Constitution for the United States of America describes the powers that the states gave to the federal government to use, to delegate to them. If the federal government is defined by the Constitution, and the Constitution says that I am one of the sovereignty, why do I feel more like a subject? I own my house. If I don't pay my property taxes, the government will go to court and remove me from my house, take it away from me, remove me from an apartment if I don't pay the rent. Do I really own the land if someone can take it from me simply because I don't pay them for the use of it? Could the King of England have taken the land away from the colonists if he did not pay their taxes? Of course. So long as I don't cause injury to someone's person or property or defraud them, shouldn't I, as a sovereign, as the king, have the right to do anything I want? Together, there are so many rules and regulations that the government has, I think, nearly everything I do and say is against the law. What has happened to my sovereignty? Isn't the government sovereign over me? Are there any sovereign people left in the United States of America? There are hundreds of thousands of sovereigns in the United States, and I am one of them. Sovereigns own their land in allodium. That is, the government does not have a financial interest in their land. And because of this, they do not need to pay property tax, a school tax, a real estate tax. Only the powers granted to the federal government in the Constitution for the United States of America define the laws that they have to follow. This is a very small subset of the laws that most of us have to follow. Unless they accept benefits from the people, unless the people accept benefits from or contract with the federal government, they do not have to pay Social Security tax, federal income tax, or resident individual state income tax. They do not need to register their cars or get driver's license, unless, of course, they drive commercially. They can own any kind of gun, fully automatic if you like, select fire, and do so without a license or a permit. They do not have to use the same court system that the U.S. federal citizens use. I'm sure that most people hearing this are saying to themselves that this simply cannot be true. I know I did when I first heard it. The government recognizes two distinct classes of citizens, a state citizen and a federal citizen. They also recognize two distinct classes of land, land that belongs to the state of a union in the union, and also federal lands. A state citizen is called a de jure citizen, It's an individual whose inalienable natural rights are recognized, secured, and protected by his or her state constitution against state actions and against federal intrusion by the Constitution for the United States of America. A federal citizen is also called a 14th Amendment citizen, a citizen of the United States, a U.S. citizen, a citizen of the District of Columbia. They're also called a resident. And they have civil rights, not natural rights. The civil rights that are almost equal to natural rights that the state citizens have. And I say I almost this because civil rights are created by Congress. And because they're created by Congress, they can be taken away by Congress, as opposed to natural rights are created or given to you by the Almighty One, and he's guaranteed not to take them away from you. Federal citizens are subjects of the Congress. They're under the protection as a resident of a state, a person enfranchised to the federal government, the incorporated United States, defined in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. The individual states may not deny to these persons any federal privileges or immunities that Congress has granted them. And this specific class of citizen is a federal citizen under admiralty law, which is also known as international law. And as such, they do not have inalienable common rights recognized, secured, protected in the constitutions of the states, the several states, or in the Constitution for the United States of America, such as allodial rights, absolute right to property, the right to inheritance, the rights to work and contract, and the right to travel, among others. A federal citizen is a taxable entity like a corporation and is subject to pay an excise tax for the privileges that the Congress has granted him or her. The rights that most people believe they have are not natural rights, but civil rights, which are actually privileges granted by Congress. And some of these civil rights parallel the protection of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. But by researching the Civil Rights Act, along with civil law decisions involving these rights, it can be easily shown that these so-called civil rights do not include the Ninth Amendment or the Tenth Amendment to our Constitution and have only limited application with regards to the Amendments 1 through 8. And again, because these are privileges that are manifest in the form of a license, they also can be taken away easily if you misbehave. If you accept any benefit from the federal government or you claim any civil right, you're making an adhesion contract with the federal government. You may not be aware of any adhesion contracts, but the courts certainly are. The other aspect of such a contract is that you will obey every statute that Congress passes, period. State citizens cannot be subjected to any jurisdiction of law outside the American common law without their knowing, willing consent after full disclosure of the terms and conditions. And as such, consent must be under agreement, it must be under contract, and sealed with a signature. This is because the Constitution itself is a compact or a contract created and existing in the jurisdiction of the common law. Therefore, any rights secured thereunder or disabilities limiting the powers of government, they also exist in the common law and in no other jurisdiction provided for in that compact. Federal citizens are presumed to be operating in the jurisdiction of commercial law because that is the jurisdiction of their creator, Congress. This is evidenced by the existence of various contracts and the use of negotiable instruments. All are products of international law or commercial law, such as the Uniform Commercial Code. So you people out there who say, well, I'm going to sign my name and put UCC 1-207 or whatever other numbers you want to put in there, you're invoking the Uniform Commercial Code and you're having that under the international law, which is admiralty law, and you're saying by doing that, hey, look over here, I'm a federal citizen. The only thing that matters is that you live up to the letter of that contract. Because you have adhesion contracts with the Congress, you cannot use the Constitution or the Bill of Rights as a defense because it is irrelevant to the contract. And as I said earlier, the contract says you will obey every statute passed by Congress. A federal citizen does not have access to common law. To restate, a state citizen is bound and protected by the Constitution, like the Founding Fathers intended and like we were taught in school what citizenship means. On the alternative, federal citizens have made further agreements with the federal government and are bound by those contracts. The Constitution empowers the federal government to do several things. First, operate on behalf of the several states in dealing with foreign relations and matters of treaties, trade agreements, and so forth under the purview of international law, admiralty law. Secondly, exercise limited constitutional jurisdictions to interact with the several states in regulating trade, commerce, and so forth between the states, and to ensure that equitable continuance of this compact is in place. They're also there to exercise exclusive jurisdiction of the District of Columbia, the territories, and the enclaves of the United States in the same manner that a state exercises jurisdiction within its boundaries. Rights are considered gifts from the Creator, and they're not to be disturbed by acts of man. In fact, they cannot be disturbed by the acts of man. Even if you wanted to surrender your natural rights, you cannot do that. But what you can do is add to your natural rights and cloud them with civil rights. Some of these rights were considered important enough to be specifically stated and enumerated to be secured from federal encroachment in the Bill of Rights upon the theory that these rights existed long antecedent to the creation of the nation, and the theory that a government left to its own devices without restriction could and would use man-made law to defeat the liberty that this republic was intended to represent. Sound familiar? Sound like life in action here? I was born in one of the several states. So why am I not a state citizen? Well, the answer is that I was born a state citizen, but unknowingly I gave it up to become a federal citizen so that I could receive benefits from the federal government. Some of the benefits that I received was a Social Security number, receiving mail sent to the state of Florida, the state of Georgia, or one of the other territories of the United States. And this was receiving this mail within zip codes, which are federal zones, having an FDIC insurance on the money left in the bank and using Federal Reserve notes, dollar bills, without protest. All this sounds crazy. Would you give away sovereign powers for the benefits like those? No, not in your life. If you have a Social Security number, you are not a state citizen. If I had known that when applying for a Social Security number, it would affect my citizenship status, I would not have applied for it, and I would have found out that the Social Security is a voluntary act and that I can work without a Social Security number. In fact, think of all the money that you've given into the government. What if you had the opportunity from the beginning to invest that wisely? I think that I've seen a number of studies that shows that just putting the money into a low-interest bearing account at the bank would have superseded the value of what you have today through the Social Security Administration. The Pennsylvania Commonwealth is one of the several states described in the Constitution. The several states were severed from each other. The law treats the several states as independent countries. The Buck Act in 1940 created federal areas inside the states. If you live in a federal area, you are subject to federal territorial laws and the municipal laws of the District of Columbia. The Internal Revenue Service is internal to the District of Columbia. The Pennsylvania Commonwealth is not part of the District of Columbia, but the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is. Uppercase P, uppercase A for Pennsylvania is the name that the post office recognizes for mail sent into the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which is a federal area. So PA, PNNA, and Pennsylvania are the names that the post office uses for mail sent into the Pennsylvania Commonwealth, which is not a federal area. If someone living in Pennsylvania accepts mail sent to PA, what they're saying is and evidencing is that they live in the part, that part of the District of Columbia. And the same situation exists in all the other states. Your zip code determines which zip code region you live in. The zip code regions are federal areas. The IRS has adopted the zip code regions as IRS regions. So, if you accept mail that has a zip code on it, you are confessing that you're in a federal territory and thus subject to the IRS and all the other municipal laws of the District of Columbia. I find this a most offensive trick to get me to lose my sovereignty. And if I didn't protest using the only legal tender in America, the Federal Reserve notes, also known as U.S. dollars, well, by doing that, I'm also receiving a benefit. And this is a complicated trick that we'll talk about a little bit later in this discussion throughout the next several weeks. Of course, there are many other benefits that people use that sovereigns cannot. Among these are the Social Security checks, the welfare checks, the food stamps, the federally insured bank accounts, Medicare, Medicaid, sending your children to publicly funded schools. I'm not trying to get everybody to give up government benefits. If you wish to support and be supported by the federal government, much like people in other countries do, then by all means, go ahead and do it. But if you wish to be a sovereign protected by the Bill of Rights and not pay the many taxes that you're paying now, but also not receive benefits, well, there is an alternative, and it's not an easy alternative. The lawmakers want control over you. They have made the legal system quite complex. It takes years for attorneys to learn the language and the procedures of our legal system. And fortunately, you do not need to know everything an attorney needs to know. You do need to have a basic understanding of how our legal system works, however. And you may be surprised that it bears little resemblance to the television courtroom dramas that you have visited upon. I also must warn you that reclaiming your state citizenship status may actually have negative effects on your life. Besides the lack of benefits, such as unemployment checks, you are treated more harshly if you get convicted of a common law crime if you are a state citizen. If you get convicted of rape and you are a federal citizen, well, you may get 5 years in an air-conditioned prison with cable TV and 3 squares a day. If you're a state citizen and get convicted by a common law jury of rape, you could be put to death. That's okay with me. I think pedophiles and rapists should be put to death. All the information described on how the United States really works and how it's supposed to work was so spread out that few people could actually see the big picture. The communication revolution, the internet, that's changed everything. Internet forums across the country provide a means to share research. Tax protesters, ranchers, religious people, historians, gun owners, and all others have found little pieces of the puzzle, and perhaps there are even more pieces of this puzzle to find. These researchers started out on different legal threads. They followed, untangled the threads until they reached the source. What was the source? A Constitution for the United States of America. The surprising thing is that the researchers did not know about each other, but they each came to similar conclusions. Some of the minor details are being debated by researchers. The overall conclusions are, however, described in these conversations that you and I will be having over the next several weeks. Some of their research will not be talked about. The longer we get on with this, the more unlikely it is that people becoming unfamiliar with the subject will even attempt to stay on these calls. Frankly, it gets long and dreary for some. For me, it's a passion. Freedom is everything. If every citizen, that's an uppercase C, in the colonies became a sovereign, then how could any citizen lose with an uppercase C lose their sovereignty? The citizens, uppercase C, of each of the several states in the Union, they were sovereigns. But the people in a territory or in the District of Columbia, they were not. They were not, because the territories and the District of Columbia are not in the Union. Congress had and still has exclusive legislative control over these areas. The states were governed by a, quote, constitutional republic, end quote, not a democracy. And while the territories were ruled by a legislative democracy, in a legislative democracy, the citizens have no rights except what Congress gives them. And those rights would actually be more correctly described as privileges. In the constitutional republics, the uppercase citizen has rights given to them by their creator, and Congress is the citizen's servant. So this is why citizens have left a state to buy or conquer land from the Native Americans and would apply for statehood as soon as possible. Can you believe that? It's true. So how is it that someone who was born in and lived in a state all his life, all her life, how can they be treated like a citizen of the District of Columbia? There have been a series of steps that Congress has made to convert the state citizen into a federal citizen. Over the years, over the decades, over the centuries, a federal citizen has made unreadable by average intelligent people. The 14th Amendment was illegally passed, creating a federal citizen who cannot question the federal debt. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 turned over our money supply, our constitutional money, to a private banking cartel. Social Security created Social Security districts or territories for the federal government within the several states in which people with a Social Security number lived. The Buck Act created federal areas inside these states, and we'll get and describe those in detail. So this concludes my comments tonight that I wanted to share with you as a preliminary, and now open up for questions, and which I'll do my very best to answer. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center of your monitor. You will see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side, and from there, Then you can type inside that rectangle your comment or your question. And then on the outside, you'll see a place to put in your contact information, then hit submit. And when you do that, I'll give voice to your comment or question on this side. So again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll open it up for questions. I'm hitting refresh. Let's see what we got. Let me check Freedoms Radio. I don't see anybody raising their hands. We're going to have an early call tonight. What I'd like to talk about is how, you know, any issues that you may have and how what we just talked about can be applicable to affecting a cure for you. Ed, thank you, from Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe I could at least make the call a little longer. I'm confused about the call from last night.
Okay.
Right now, I went to bed last night with the understanding I didn't get to listen to the whole thing. I wore out. But I sent my affidavit in. You sent it in.
Right. Right.
And so, as far as I'm concerned, as of now, it's an unrebutted affidavit.
Correct.
From a national, as the affidavit claimed. And
well, that has to be borne out. Right now, you've noticed the State Department of the United States to correct their records, nunc pro tunc, and that your
right.
statement that you bear as a not being a United States citizen, but being a citizen of one of the several states as an American national, that is ab initio. In other words, you've always been that. You've never
correct.
Elected to be a federal citizen.
Correct. That's
so now the next step this week and next week and the weeks following is that I will be sitting down with you and others during the day on my computer with you on the phone and you looking at a calendar, and I'll be suggesting to you or sharing with you what is online and available for you to have your 15-minute interview.
Yeah.
And that's the next step. And I just ask everyone's patience as I go through that list.
Does one pay for the passport?
Well, yeah, you'll have to pay for your passport.
Do you recall how much that is right now?
I'm going to say in the neighborhood of $200, $225, something like that. $250, I don't know.
Okay. Okay. The and then a picture. And if
you have to have is this is what you have to have. If you don't already have it, go out this week to get a passport picture from a Walmart or a Walgreens or CVS, whatever.
Yeah, full face and a profile.
UPS store. And then you have a choice of one or two things. If you have an existing passport, then that's all you'll need plus that picture. If you don't have an existing... Sorry?
Mine was seized. Looking at all the questions on the passport thing, and my passport was seized, and I don't remember anything at all that was on it. I hardly had it for any length of time. Never used it.
Okay. Right. So you'll need to have a certified copy of your birth certificate, not a photocopy, but a certified copy. So that plus your passport picture you carry in with you. And there'll be a few other things, but that's what you need right now. And then we'll also have a Sunday call for the people that week to attend to so that we can go through that 15 minutes. Or if time allows, then we'll just do that call with GW, while we've got you on the phone so that you have everything in place. I'll probably invite you to record it.
My biggest question there is, after listening to some of the conversation back and forth, they thought I owed an IRS debt. And it's considerable. And
right.
I told them in the very beginning that I was not a U.S. citizen, and they went ahead and did their thing anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And with that debt, from what I saw, I would understand that the IRS has to sign off on this too. And the question is would they?
Okay, and the answer is, why are you telling your interviewer in for the 15 minutes from the State Department that you have a Social Security number?
Okay,
Do you have a driver's license?
Right. I don't have a driver's license either. All that is owned by
If you had a driver's license, who owns that driver's license?
The state does.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And if you had a Social Security number, who owns the Social Security number?
I happen to have the original card yet, and it says that it's owned by the U.S. government.
Correct. So if you were to sit there, having taken an oath or affirmation, would you be able to say that you do not have a Social Security number?
True. I don't have one.
Good. I'm looking for something that you want to hear. Hold on a second. Banking. Social Security is not used for ID. All right. Public Law 93-579. This is approved December 31st, 1974. It's also known as the privacy.
Read that number again, please.
PL 93-579.
Okay.
Also known as the Privacy Act of 1974.
Okay. Yep.
Section 7. Open bracket. 5 U.S.C. 552A. Close bracket. A. 1. It shall be unlawful for any federal, state, or local government agency to deny to any individual any right, benefit, or privilege provided by law because of such individual's refusal to disclose his Social Security account number, providing if he has one. Number 2, the 330 provisions of paragraph 1 of this subsection shall not apply with respect to A, any disclosure which is required by federal statute, or B, the disclosure of a Social Security number to any federal, state, or local agency maintaining a system of records in existence and operating before January 1st, 1975. If such disclosures were required under statute or regulations adopted prior to such a date to verify the identity of an individual. In other words, it's a federal crime for anyone other than the Social Security Administration to ask you for a Social Security number. And frankly, I could sit there, look the fellow dead in the eye, with all truth coming from my lips, saying, sir, ma'am, I do not have a Social Security number. If they hem and haw, I could tell the truth and say, sir, my parents were entrepreneurs. They bought, they sold, they traded, they bartered. This is how they taught me to live. I buy, I sell, I trade, and I barter. This is how I get along in the world, get along my way. I've never had to have my own Social Security number. See how I worded that? I made a truthful statement. I've never had to have my own Social Security number. Of course, I'm not going to say anything to them about using a Social Security number for the first 50 years of my life, but that's beside the point. So you get the idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Not for me.
All righty. Thank you so very, very much. Next is Jennifer Sue. Go ahead, Jennifer Sue.
Mr. Michael.
Hi there. Long time no hear.
Yeah. It sounds like you have received some people's responses from the Department of State.
No. This is what, Tuesday? Last week, I guess Thursday last week or Friday maybe, I called GW and said, hey, guy, it's now, we're now hitting 4 weeks, 5 weeks for some, and I've not had any response from the State Department. And he said, well, you may very well not. It doesn't matter. What matters now is that you are now set to make the interviews for the people to get their passports, because the State Department has had plenty of time upon proof of receipt, which I have the receipts for every single posting I did. I did them separately. I did not do them as a single. Every one that it was, I stood in line, but every time I stood there, it was for one person. And they're all out, and it's now been a full month and plus for some people. So we're all primed, myself included now, to set the appointments. The very first appointment I will set will be for myself with GW, and then following that would be a fellow named Kim, and because he was the first to come in, and there's a few others that will be done first because they were there first, and then I'll be doing it in the order that the payments were received. the gifts we received. So I just ask people now, please be kind and don't call me and say, am I there yet? You know, don't be like, don't be the 10-year-old in the back seat. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? No. Okay. That's the next step.
Can I be a 4-year-old instead of a 10-year-old?
You may be a 4-year-old.
Now, what was I going to say? So we don't actually need. I mean, if we're meeting someone from the State Department, how do they know what we're meeting with them for
You're showing up either with a certified copy of your birth certificate, or you're showing up with your naturalization papers, or you're showing up with a passport that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to ascertain who you are.
But what are they there to do?
They're there to ask you a few questions. They're there to receive the paperwork from you, to receive the passport photograph, and then it's like I was told it was like 10 minutes actually or less, but you've got a 15-minute window
that's where you're applying for the passport?
Yes, and approximately 3 weeks later in the mail, 4 weeks, you'll be getting the passport delivered to you along with a State Department identification card.
I see. I didn't realize that's what we were meeting with that person. That would start the passport, start the procedure for getting the passport and the card at the same time?
You're in that 15-minute interview, a 10-minute interview, you're answering a few questions, and you're delivering the documents that we just talked about. And then you leave.
Uh-huh.
And then about 3 weeks, 4 weeks later in the mail, you'll be getting your passport plus your ID.
Okay. Well, I'll go get my passport papers then. And
so
get
we're on the home stretch.
Okay. Sounds good. So, did GW say you don't always get a response from the State Department?
Correct. I was under the original understanding that you do. But he said no, you don't.
Oh.
Not always. You can, but not always. So.
Right.
The important thing is that you have proof of mailing, if you would, which I have for each one, and we'll go from there.
Great. Well, thanks.
All righty, thank you. Brian, you're next, followed by Brent.
Good night. Bye.
Good night.
Hello, Michael. Can you hear me?
Perfectly clear.
Thank you. You're well aware of my situation. I don't have my passport, but I have my what did you give me today?
The other day I gave you the affidavit.
Thank
to
you.
Sign.
So
Go ahead. I gave you the affidavit to sign and the cover sheet. And what I was suggesting in your unique situation, in fact, Jennifer, let me unmute Jennifer, bring her back here real quick. Where is she? There she is. Jennifer, meet Brian. Brian, this is Jennifer. Brian. Jennifer enjoyed a blue light special a few weeks back on the interstate or someplace where she was traveling. And the law enforcement officer, the Leo, that's what they're called, Leo, law enforcement officer, had a bad case of mistaken identity and issued her a speeding ticket and I guess some other things. So, Jennifer, why don't you explain what you've done so far for Brian's benefit and the benefit of the group on the call?
Well, I hired John to help me send in my affidavit with other paperwork to which I took down to the court as my answer to their ticket. And I didn't say on their ticket, I didn't put anything on their ticket. I just wrote not guilty and all this stuff on the paperwork. And then I took it down there and I made them stamp it, even though they were reluctant. And they said, you'll get a court date from us within 1 to 2 months. I'm like, 1 to 2 months? Yeah, so that's how long it took. So I actually haven't heard anything since then, because it hasn't been 1 to 2 months yet. So when I do hear something, I can let you know. But I'm pretty sure that there's not much they can do. They'll have to either have... If I go to the court, I'll be talking to them about what they don't want everyone else to know, or they will just cancel it and not make a court date. So we'll see what happens.
Very interesting.
History has shown that they'll set a court date and you'll appear. And then the judge will say, where is the witness? Where is the law enforcement officer? And then the clerk looks up to the judge and says, I'm sorry, but the law enforcement officer had another engagement and could not make it court today. And the judge says, so there's no witness? He goes, no. Then the judge says, not guilty. There was ignoring the whole argument of jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
And I would encourage you to accept it and just walk away and be smiling. But the reason for myself, I would have come back and said, Your Honor, no, I don't want to talk to you about what I would say, because that might give you ideas and you might want to do it and you're not prepared to do it.
Right. My brain will probably malfunction from fear in the court.
No, there's traps that the court always would say, and it might be as innocent as this. Well, you're Jennifer Sue. Is your residency 123 Main Street?
Yeah, I know not to say I don't reside anywhere in, but I do live somewhere.
No, your answer. My answer would be, Your Honor, I have no evidence in my possession or knowledge of having a residency.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, I have no evidence or knowledge of whatever,
right,
because that puts the burden of proof back on the prosecutor, who happens to be the judge at this time.
Right.
Well, Michael, haven't you said at one time that I reside where I stand, or I live where I stand?
No, you don't reside anywhere. Only federal citizens have residencies or reside. Only a federal citizen. Somebody asked me one time in court, where do I live?
Ah.
And I put my fingers up to my cartroid. Is it cartroid? Is that how you pronounce it? Cartroid? Anyways, that thing on your neck that stands out when you get really angry. I put my fingers up there. I drew a deep theatrical breath, and I said, Your Honor, I am so pleased to confess that I live right here.
What if I say,
the first thing I say is, well, Your Honor, I know that the words you use are going to try and trick me into your jurisdiction, and I know that I'm not educated in that. And so it's unfair of you to take any words I say and assume that because I say them, I'm in your jurisdiction. So if you'd like to talk to me, you have to go under those conditions, or otherwise it has to be in writing.
No, I would just go directly to the writing. That's a very good question, Your Honor. You know, I just understand that I'm not a trained lawyer or have any experience in law. I'm sitting here floundering. I need my inner tube. I'm over my head in water here. So please, If you have that question, put it in writing and give it to me. I will do my research, and in 6-7 days, 10 days at best, I will be back with a written answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Don't fall for anything to answer any questions. That's a good question, Your Honor. Could you please put it in writing?
Even if it's, where do you live? Or do you, well, do you just
my
wait.
My smart tuckus would sit there and do the same thing. I'd put my fingers up to my neck and I'd take a deep theatrical breath and say, Your Honor, I'm pleased to say I live right here and now. I'm alive.
Michael, do you call it a mailing address? That's a mailing address. That's
no,
not
you don't have an address. You have a post location.
That's my post location.
What's your post location? Don't you remember it was care of? If you go back to your affidavit, study your post location. That is care of, and then the city, and then the word city.
I noticed when I went to send it at the postal office today, they didn't put care of. They just took your address and sent it straight
that
to you.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they do.
Right. That's important what you put there, though. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. Anything else, Brian?
No, sir. I think I understand and look forward to succeeding. Thank you.
I look forward to hearing from you just after the hearing. Call me, okay?
Yes, sir. Will do.
Thank you. Anything else, Brian?
No, sir.
Thank you. Brent, welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I guess I got distracted and forgot what I was going to ask. We were talking about before this whole court thing came up and the traffic tickets. Well, we were talking about the passports, and that's one of the things I want to ask you in relationship to my particular situation, is that I am currently between equipment, and so I am not utilizing my passport on a daily basis. I am going to be finishing up my training the first week of July, and at that point, I'll have to have my passport back again. And I have heard that there is a process when you go to the State Department like that, or one of these passport offices, that if you have a scheduled international travel, that you can get an expedited processing for the passport, and you can actually get it that day.
Yes. I need to give you a quick conference call with John, and he can school you on that.
Okay.
You've got to do something. You have to do something, for instance, I'm going to say to, if I were doing it here in Florida, I'm leaving tomorrow for Mexico, and here's a work order. Here's the plane ticket. Make sure it's refundable. My plane ticket to go to Mexico, I got to have a passport. Anyways, call me tomorrow, anytime after 10 o'clock Eastern, and I will attempt to get you directly talking to John, and he can share with you because he has done that many times for people.
Well, it's only going to be important after you and I have our meeting, so I'll just wait in line until you call me.
Okay. Sure. All righty.
Because I do have a month. Anyways, the other question I had is, are you, you're obviously not posting these calls on the Telegram site anymore. And are they available online?
No. Wait a minute. Let me just clarify. I've not posted them because I was told by Bernie that he was told by the admin not to put them up there anymore, that it was clogging something or other. I'm not sure what it was. So the admin has come up with something else. So I will be resending them in to Bernie, and Bernie will be posting them in another fashion. They will not be up there as being pinned at the top. I think that's what's been. They will be, what do you call it? There'll be a link to a cloud where you can listen to them. I was told by my programmer that by the end of this week, the archive tab will be up at correctmystatus.com, which will then redirect you to AmericanByBirth.com. If you can just wait another 4 days or so, you're going to see it there. But just to let you know, that's what the skinny is.
Okay, very good. Yeah, because I very infrequently have this time of day available.
I should.
All right, that's it. Thank you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you so much. Be well. Next is, Brian come back for another whack at the brass ring. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Michael, just wanted to say the clogging was probably the size of your calls, because they usually go to 2 hours. So that is probably the reason why you have to link them to an outside data source. But nonetheless, I want to say thank you to Jennifer. That was amazing information. And, y'all, I'm going into this without a passport and just my affidavit. So look forward to reporting great results next week. And thank you, Michael. Thank you, everyone, for the help.
All right. Remember, anything that I said was just a suggestion of what I might do where I was similarly situated to your circumstances.
And I feel confident with that. Thank you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. Let me go check for Freedoms Radio while you're thinking about doing it. Otherwise, we'll say goodnight. Let me check real quick here. Usually it flashes. Let's see what we got here. Got a healthy crowd over on Freedoms Radio, so we should have questions. But I guess not. All righty. That's it. Press star 2. Nobody else. I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening. It was a great call. I miss PJ, but know that he's... Whoop! Miss Jennifer.
I just wondered if you want me to say the type of documents that John helped me with or not for Brian.
Well, no, you really can't, because that's proprietary for you, number one. It does. You're in New York, and Brian's over there in Texas, so it's not going to work. But
okay, all right.
Okay? You see, there's a mistake that a lot of people make. When they're researching filings on the internet, and they'll see something that was really,
really good,
say in New York, Jennifer's filing will be probably published by somebody on the internet, and when then somebody in Texas sees it and goes, "I love it," they make the mistake. They do the general. Replacement of names and, you know, the specifics like that. But the cases that they use in support of what they're doing are only applicable typically to New York. And the judge is in Texas is looking at it and saying, this is a waste of my time. So each one has to be uniquely tailored for the individual. All right. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. Thank you for all your questions and comments. I hope that I did well here, in spite of PJ not doing the calls anymore. This is the format that we'll be following for Tuesday. Again, remember, it is so that you don't know and understand there is a team available that you can bring aboard to assist you in whatever litigation that you're looking at, and that the first step will always be, the question will always be, have you corrected your status? Because that is so incredibly powerful. And so to let in, what, Michael, you just came on. Okay, go ahead, Michael, Las Vegas.
Good evening. Yes, on your status, do you use the state that you were born in or the state that you currently have a post at?
No, your status is established by the state of that you were born in. That's on your birth certificate. In other words, when you have your birth certificate, the hospital sends it to the vital statistics of your state, and then vital statistics sends it to the State Department of the United States. What we didn't know until recently is that the State Department of the United States said they've got the evidence in their hand that you were born in Nevada, as an example. And they know it. They're looking at your birth certificate, and they go, yep, federal citizen. And that's the box they put you in.
All right. That's answered that question. Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's it. I've had several people, Danielle and Troy and Emily and Mark. I don't know why they don't dial in and ask questions, but I'll be asking them this week. So.
All righty.
Maybe we'll get more response next week.
All right. Brent, you came back for another bite at the apple. What can I do for you?
Yeah, it just tastes so good tonight. You were talking about the addresses and the post location and the use of a zip code and all that stuff. And I have changed the way I'm writing my address. But I still get mail, obviously, and still receive things, packages I order and things like that. And they don't write it correctly. Does receiving something like that and not refusing it put you back under federal jurisdiction?
Not really. You're giving it to them the right way. They're taking it and converting it to something else. That's not your fault or problem. If you have corrected your status, you've got your new passport, your State Department ID. If somebody were to knock on your door and say, I'm an investigator with the State Department or with the District Attorney's Office or State Attorney's Office, whatever, depending on your state, and I want to talk to you about what we believe to be a crime that you've committed, you know, just want to start talking to you about it, whatever, they can't put you through their court system. They cannot put you through their court system. And when we get enough people on our end, where I've got 100-plus people who have corrected their status, every one of you, I will be asking you, will you please avail yourself to serve on a grand jury or on a petit jury or et cetera? There are people that are in this group that can be the judges. We have the right as American nationals to establish our own courts. That's Amendment 7 of the Constitution. And then once adjudication has been made, present to their courts a foreign judgment for them to consider filing. They don't have to accept it. And you can't force it upon them. But you can have a foreign judgment on a flesh and blood man acting under color of law, depriving of you of your rights. And if you're blessed to have a constitutional sheriff enforce the judgment, woohoo! It wouldn't take long for people to get the attention they deserve for that.
Okay.
That's it. All right, everybody, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Next week, Saturday, remember to visit the same phone number and PIN for Bernie to show you how to become judgment-proof, actually, so that nothing that you enjoy in the way of property can be taken because you don't own it. And then we'll return again Monday with GW, who will go through the details more about the process. We're gonna start hammering on that 15-minute interview so that people that are on the call will be comfortable with it and moving forward. So until then, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.